Hello and welcome to another episode of Chasing Excellence. My name is Patrick Cummings. I am here as always with Ben Bergeron, and we have a special guest. We've got a friend of the show this week. Julie Fouché is joining us. Every week here on the show, we dedicate some time to exploring how we can live a life of better health and increased fulfillment. We answer your questions about the five factors of health, dive deep on living a life of excellence, and explore the strategies and frameworks to help us chase what truly matters. Thank you all so much for joining us. And Julie, thank you for joining us. For the few folks who maybe don't know who you are, here's the very high-level bio. You're a multi-time CrossFit Games competitor, physician for Wild Health, which is a precision telemedicine practice, and you're a podcaster. What am I missing there? What else do you like to add to your bio for folks who maybe don't know you?
That sounds great to me.
That's it. Those are good. I like those. Cool. All right. So, Julie, thank you for joining us. We are, as we have done with friends of the show, we're just going to kind of fit you into our format here. So what we've got coming up this week or this episode, we've got questions about our current health and fitness goals, appreciating the highs of performance and the lulls of everyday life equally, and dealing with rep shavers. Our workout this week is going to be a conversation about how to balance our health with our ambitions and our work. And lastly, we'll wrap up our most recent 30-day challenge. Ready?
Ready. Let's go.
We're going to start our episode, as we always do, with our questions about five factors of health, those few fundamental behaviors that most positively affect our performance, vitality, and longevity. Those five factors are how we eat, how we move, how we think, how we connect, and how we recover. And as we have done when we have guests here, friends of the show, I've condensed these. Instead of five questions about the five factors, we've got three questions about three of those five factors. So we're going to get right into it. One, this is from Adam, and it's in our move category. A little over 2 years ago, a group of us got together and started a co-op CrossFit affiliate in our town because the gym we had been going to was forced to shut down from lockdowns. It was also around this time that I injured my shoulder, and I've been working my way back to full strength ever since. As part of my motivation to continue the grind of rehab, I told myself that my goal was to be more fit at 40 than I was at 30. Fast forward to tomorrow, which is my 40th birthday, and I feel like I've achieved my goal. I may not be moving more weight, but I feel like I'm overall more fit and healthy, not only physically, but mentally. So my question to you guys is, how have your goals evolved as you've gotten older? And do you have milestone goals or things that you want to accomplish at certain points down the road? So I thought this was a wonderful question for a former CrossFit Games athlete. So we're going to let you go first, Julie. Thoughts?
Well, I love this question, and I say hats off to you. What was his name?
Who asked the question?
Adam. Yep. For having that perspective of saying, well, I'm not lifting as much weight, but I feel overall more fit and healthy. It just makes me think that he's looking at health as a much more well-rounded perspective, like you all do. And so I would say for me, that's definitely the case also. I think I have really stepped back from having specific fitness and performance goals over the last several years, and my fitness goals are much more around consistency and habits. And I just see that the results come from that, putting yourself in the right environment, you know, trying to be in a CrossFit affiliate environment for workouts a few times a week, consistency with training, as opposed to having specific performance goals. Not to say that I won't have performance goals again in the future, but for right now in this particular phase of life, that's not a big focus for me. And I find that it really supports my overall health, like Adam was saying, not just the physical, but also mental, emotional, all of those five factors.
Was that a hard transition for you to make from, I imagine it wasn't a light switch where you just one day you just turned it on, but that transition from being so hyper, I imagine hyper focused on performance goals, numbers, metrics, et cetera, progress, hyper. Was that hard to turn off, like that part of your brain?
It's interesting. It was easier than I thought it would be for me. But the hard part is to still push yourself and to still care, because I think that you can have this mentality of, oh, well, it doesn't really matter anymore because I'm not competing. I don't have these performance competition goals. So who cares if I, you know, maybe go a little easier on this workout. And so I think that for me has been the, maybe the hardest part. I think that there are certainly times where I've been using Beyond the Whiteboard since 2009, since I first started. So I have all my scores logged. If I go in and look at Fran, I have like 30 plus results over the last, 14 years. And I'm not going to say there's not moments where it's hard to be like, wow, I've really, really slipped here. But I can quickly you know, redirect my thoughts into looking at things with a broader perspective and being proud of my efforts. And those benchmark workouts, I think, are still great for me because often, you know, they do allow me the opportunity to push myself harder and to compare and to surprise myself. You know, you realize how much that base of fitness that I had lasts. I mean, I think even the first couple of years after I stepped away from having competition goals, I was shocked by how much of that base of fitness really sticks mm-hmm. around, even if your training significantly, volume significantly decreases. And so I can't say that I still have that now, but it is interesting to see how much of it. I mean, every year the Open surprises me. When you see how much of that is so much your mental approach, so much of the muscle memory and all the repetitions you've done over so many years, and you can pull that out when you need to.
Mm, absolutely. Ben, I also like this question for you because I heard you talk, and I can't remember where, but you were talking about actually starting to move more weight than you have in years. I think it was because you're back, which mm-hmm. we talked about before. But it struck me as interesting because like you might now be getting into a place where, because maybe you've got some more capacity, it's probably not the right word, but maybe a little bit more, you're giving yourself a little bit more permission to maybe move some weights that you didn't. I'm wondering, like, are you adding, or are you kind of thinking about metrics that you're trying to hit, or is that not kind of front of mind for you?
So I'll get to that, but first I want to like just highlight, because I think we glossed over this, and Julie's not only a multi-game athlete, but she was like one of the best of the best. So it's cool to hear the approach that she's taking now in terms of it's more about the mental, emotional, and the physical aspects of that. Crazy to hear that you've done Fran that many times, Julie. I think most for.
I actually want to look it up now to see
what you do. You know what your do you know what, like off the top of your head or around, like what was your best Fran ever?
So I want to say it was either 206 or 216, Ooh. But I can't mm-hmm. remember. Let me look.
That's crazy because that's even like that's a bonkers difference too, 206 to 216. Okay, and just give some reference to that, like where. What's your most recent or where do you think you are now?
So it's been, I think I did it last year and I surprised myself. I'm got to pull it up here because I think I did it in around 3 minutes, which was shocking to me. So I most recently did it. Oh, it was 2021. Okay. So it's been two years since I've done it. A year. And that was around. It was 243.
240. So that's everyone's lifetime.
Which is crazy. Yeah,
lifetime goals to get sub three. And Julie's doing that casually, you know, 10 years removed from competing. But I think that's a really cool understanding that this focus on process over goals can actually lead to really, really good results. And there's this weird dichotomy, which is the more you focus on results and the more meaning the goal, for a lot of people that can actually be a rougher sea to swim through than kind of just like pushing that aside and focusing, as Julie said about the process. It's about consistency. It's about showing up and recognizing that for her to push back from that 243 back down to that 210, whatever it is, plus or minus 6 seconds.
It was 213. It split the difference. It was 213.
There's so much trade-off. And I think that's the biggest thing that we recognize when we move away from this elite level is it's really this understanding of like, I'm not willing to sacrifice the trade-offs. And if for us to get to that goal, whatever it might be. And if Adam's setting himself for goals of fitter 40 than 30, I kind of like that as a, because I like vision more than hard goals. I like a feel, as Adam said, I feel like I am. I might not be moving as much weight, but I feel like I am. And to me, that's a much stronger approach than I want a 230 Fran to clean and jerk 300 to run a 545 mile, because when you do that, you're always putting yourself up for this judgment of pass fail at every step along the journey, as opposed to this vision of long trajectory, distant horizon. I want to be fitter 40 than 30. The importance and the immediacy and the urgency of today's workout falls away a little bit. And it's just like, I'm just going to make sure that I'm showing up and putting in the effort. I'm going to show up and putting the effort. I'm going to show up and putting the effort, which means the process. So that's where I've fallen into. And to get to your question, Patrick, because I've done that without the idea of I want to be able to deadlift, squat, bench, clean jerk, and snatch these weights, it's just happened. And this is what happens a lot, even with really high level teams, is the ones that say, like, we got to go undefeated. We got to win the conference championships. We got to win a national championship. What you can end up doing, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but you can end up putting unnecessary pressure on yourself. And that can actually take away from the focus on today, and or you end up pushing too hard on today and end up having to take a couple steps back. My whole thing is, like, I just want to make sure that today is as effective as it can be with no steps back. And I just want to commit to that process of showing up 6 days a week. And I feel like if I do that, I'll achieve what Adam's saying. I'll be fitter at 50 for me now, 50 than I was at 40. And the proof is in the pudding right now, is that I never kind of, you know, as you said, Patrick, and most people that listen to this, I had back surgery, a fusion, and I committed to, like, I'm never going to lift above a 135 bar after that. But 10 years later, you know, I'm, you know, playing around with close to some old weights that I used to be at. So, and it's just this, like, let go of the results and the goals and just sit in the process. So that's where I kind of, like, I'm not, it sounds weird in a chasing excellence environment, but I think goals can work for some people, but not all people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Love that.
I love that. And I couldn't agree more with the letting go. I think that sometimes when we become so attached to the outcome, that becomes our own enemy, or it gets in our way instead of, like you said, the process. And we're probably going to have the best outcomes when we are not attached and we're just focusing on the process. I think the difference, like you said, between there's a difference between excellence and perfection.
Right.
And so being so attached to perfection, I think, can often get in our way.
Would you say, Julie, you know, thinking back, and Ben too, obviously worked with plenty of games athletes, that mentality, that mindset of process over goals, does that still feed that particular pursuit just as well as it does, you know, the three of us in our current states of life? Or is there something about, okay, if you're trying to get to the CrossFit Games, like, you've got to, it's, I mean, it is about process, but you've got to be hyper-focused on the results more than you would be later.
I'll jump in on it. In having worked with a bunch of different athletes, it's individual. Some people are going to be so driven and commitment. They need the North Star. They need to know, I need to be able to swim a 500 in this time. They need to know that I need to be able to do this many unbroken bar muscle ups. I need to strive to be able to, you know, podium at the games or bust. Other people, that's the unnecessary pressure, and it's going to be a massive hindrance that they need to overcome on a daily basis. So it really is what works for you individually. And same thing with business or personal life or anything else. You know, it's do you want to be able to, like, is an earning goal good for you or not? And again, recognizing where that fits, you know, where, you know, Julie and I are, where it fits in the trade-off of everything else.
Julie, any thoughts?
I agree. I think I like the idea of having a North Star, but it might look different for each person, because I think you have to have somewhere that vision out there, but how attached you are to it every day. You know, I don't know that being attached to a certain clean and jerk goal and thinking about it all the time is necessarily, at least it wasn't helpful for me. But I think, you know, one example, when I first started CrossFit, before I ever considered competing, it was summer of 2009. And so I had watched that summer's CrossFit Games at Aromas. And, you know, Heather was one of the competitors. I was watching these women run up the hill and I'm like, this is crazy. And I never thought I would compete, but I printed out that year, they posted, here is all the women's, you know, average times of all the women on the benchmark workouts, and here are the best times. And I printed those out and I put them up on my wall in my room, not thinking like, wow, I'm going to get these, just thinking, wow, that's something that's impressive. And throughout the course of the next year, without necessarily focusing on those every day, every so often I'd look at it and be like, huh, wow, I achieved that, or I'm getting close to that one. And so there's something about putting it out there that I think is important, because we can often, you know, sell ourselves short if we don't have those goals or think that we can achieve things that are big, but then not being so obsessed about them every day, I think is healthy. At least it has been for me.
Very cool. Okay, let's jump into our next question. This is in our think category, and it's from Travis. He asks, or he says, I have a regular full-time job throughout the week and do CrossFit Monday through Thursday. And on the weekends, I'm a professional wrestler. One of the biggest difficulties I have is creating this huge high on the weekend, performing in front of hundreds of people as a performer. But when I wake up the next day, and sometimes even longer, I have the lull of going back to my norm. How can I better appreciate my daily life when I'm constantly chasing the high of performance? Julie, we'll give you this one first as well.
Ooh, that's a good question. So I think, I mean, having a lull after any big event or any big performance is very normal. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like he's doing that almost every weekend, which just sounds like a lot to me. I think back to, you know, for me, even growing up in school, at the end of a school year, I'd always have this big lull after all your tests and your finals, or you know, after the CrossFit Games, or you think about Olympians, what it's like for them after, you know, a big push for a 4-year cycle. And it's a very difficult time. And so I think what has helped me is being able to just process that and know, like, okay, this is a normal part. You have these ups and you have these downs, but then also knowing what your next goal is. And it sounds like there's this contrast for him between, you know, the excitement of the weekend and then the like mundane kind of day to day. Oh, I'm going to my day job. It's not as fun as wrestling in front of a bunch of people. So I think it's a lot about appreciating, having gratitude or appreciating those other aspects of life. So, you know, finding what is it, even if it's other goals in life besides just the wrestling, like what else is it that makes you come alive? What else is it that you get excited about? Whether it's, you know, another hobby, whether it's being better at your job, better in your relationships, really rounding out all of those, you know, 5 areas, I think, can be very helpful. I think I can relate to this too. I think there's also something cool about it when you have sort of a double life, right? I can relate to coming back. I remember 1 year coming back from the CrossFit Games and you land on Sunday night and then you go to school Monday morning and you're just like a normal person. And so there's something kind of cool about that too. And being able to just be, you know, be in both worlds, I guess.
Yeah. I think that that's the strong understanding what Julia is leading towards is that like, there's going to be the down after the high. And that's called the parasympathetic lashback. When you are in that excitement, that fight or flight, you're in a competition, you're in an event, you're studying for an exam, it's the big moment. Well, after that big moment, your body needs the rest and recover. And that's going to kind of push you back into that. It's going to force you into that and it's draining. So just that level of understanding is the first one. And then I really think that this comes down to two things. One of two things. The first one is for Travis is if I was to ask Travis, like I love heli skiing and I heli ski every single weekend and it's my thing. It's my jam. It's the thing that sets me on fire. It's the greatest thing I ever do. But then when I go back to my job of being an accountant, I don't feel the same way. Travis, what do you think I should do? Well, to me, it's one of two things. It's either recognize that that's real life. You're not always going to have that. Like you're going to be able to go heli skiing, but you're not going to heli ski every single day. So recognize that there is this two parts to your life. There's this amazing thing, but then there's also like, you got to do the work or go all in. And like, if this is your thing, Travis, and you want to train this way and live this life and be around these people all the time, try and become a pro. Instead of wrestling in front of a couple hundred people every weekend, you're wrestling in front of 35,000 people, you know, every 3 or 4 weeks. And that's the life you're living. So that'd be the same thing. It's like either I'm going to try to work for a heli skiing company, or I'm going to accept the like radical acceptance of reality that this is a weekend thing and I'm not going to have it all the time. And in between, I'm going to live the quote more mundane life, but don't beat yourself up for this thing is kind of just the way it is.
I think there's also an opportunity to look at the lulls, the more mundane as the bridge by which you get to go to the highs. In other words, in Travis's case, he gets to do this every weekend. And I imagine the job is what allows him the freedom, the financial ability to say, okay, on Friday afternoon to Sunday night, I don't work. I don't think about, I get to do this thing. And so it's not as if actually that they're separate. It's actually that one feeds the other thing. So the lulls, quote unquote lulls, is necessary for the highs. Without the lulls, he might not be able to get to the highs.
I really like that aspect coupled with Julie's kind of double life thing, right? And I think everyone's like, Julie had it as a incredibly high competitive CrossFit athlete. Travis has it as a wrestler. But other people have it as like, I go off into the wilderness on Friday afternoon and I'm living off the land until Sunday afternoon. I come back and I'm wearing a suit Monday morning and meeting with clients in a mahogany boardroom. And it's like kind of like that weird but cool, super amazing aspect that there, this isn't the totality of my life. I have this other aspect too, which really lights me up.
I think that's also what maybe can make us appreciate those things. If we were doing them all the time, they might not be as exciting. So when you just said that, Ben, it made me think about even being a kid, and my parents had a cottage on a lake. And so on the weekend, we'd go up Friday night, we'd come back Sunday night, and then we'd go back to school. And I remember some nights you're jumping off the boat, you're having so much fun. It's Sunday, like 4 p.m. and you're like, I don't want to go home. And then next thing you know, you're in school Monday morning, but you're like, oh, yesterday I was jumping off the boat in the lake. That was so cool. And all these other kids, like they were just, you know, here playing in their backyard or whatever. So there is something, I think, about the excitement of it when it's more rare and something you look forward to. And it's not your everyday. You know, people who, they say like people who live on a lake don't enjoy it as much as people who just go there on the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Was there a point in the training for the CrossFit Games when that performance, when those performance highs were kind of an actual part of your life, Julie, where the mundane elements of training on a regular day, was that ever hard to remind or to remember or to balance, like, oh, I got a 2-hour session here and I'm like 3 months from my next competition. And like, why am I doing this? Why am I putting my, like, was there ever a disconnect between the competitive performance and the mundane, the lullness of the, just like the training for that next one?
That's a loaded question, Patrick. That could take a while to answer, but I will say I had a lot of lows after the season. Yeah. So that, you know, fall period was always very difficult for me. And, but I found, you know, I think for anything, when you're training for something that big, focusing on the big thing will get in your way. Kind of like we were just talking about. So for me, it was always about what do I do today? What do I do in the next workout? Because if you look at the so much of it, it becomes overwhelming. So I really, you know, found a lot of, comfort in that, just focusing on what's the next step. How can I do the best I can do in this very next, you know, piece?
Cool. Let us jump into our next question, our third and final question for our first section here. This is in the Connect bucket. No name on this for obvious reasons in a second. I have a friend I've known for 3+ years at my CrossFit gym. We have a similar ability level and each made the individual quarterfinals and age group quarterfinals this season. We're both extremely competitive and have the same coach for individual programming. My concern is for years, I've caught her rep shaving, lying about her score and time, cheating on the standard, etc. I know I need to worry about myself and not compare myself to others, but it's incredibly difficult when we are basically the only two competitive females in our age group at our gym. Of course, she always says she's quote unquote humbled during the open when she loses to me on almost every workout, even though she'll almost always quote unquote beat me in competition class or training workouts. This is always followed up with excuses about one thing or another. So my question, how do you remain friends or train with somebody you know doesn't meet the expectations of honesty and integrity that you hold for yourself? I'll go to you this time, Ben, because I've been going to Julie first. So
yeah.
What do you think?
Okay. A couple approaches to this. The first is she's answering the question in her question where she said, I know I need to focus on myself, but that's incredibly hard. I mean, that's really is the answer. Now, that's also what's really interesting is that's not only is that incredibly hard, but that is the easiest way to navigate this, is to just really focus on yourself. The next level up is more challenging, which is if this truly is a friend, recognizing that clear is kind and having a difficult conversation. Now, there's more risk with that, but there's also potential for more reward. So it's up to this anonymous question person to figure out where the right place is for them. Cause it's really where I would go, is have that hard conversation, but that's not for everybody. And I'm not saying it's better to have the hard conversation, because if the hard conversation doesn't go well, you might not have a friend and a training buddy. That's a reality. But if it does go well, you solve the situation. So there's a more reward there. Regardless of which tactic you take, though, where she said in the middle of that question, I know I need to focus on myself, but that's really difficult. Yes. And then when you're doing that, the idea is the goal of life is not to get everyone to meet your standard of honesty and integrity. That's not what we're trying to do. That's like saying, I eat meat, vegetables, nuts, seed, little starch, no sugar, but my family doesn't. How do I get them to level up their nutrition without losing them in the relationship I have? It's the same question. It's first off, recognize that what's right for you is not what's right for everyone else. Okay. Focus on you still. Don't be influenced by that environment. You live your own life of integrity close to your values and principles. And then from there, figure out how or if the conversation is the right place. So in the nutrition component, like working with my in-laws, I didn't have that conversation for the first 6 or 7 years. But the last 4 or 5 years it's been a huge component of it, because it wasn't the right place at the right time. But I'm also trying not to get them to eat like us. And it's the same thing. I'm not trying to get people to count their reps and do all the things like that. I am, but it might not be the right place for this person. So I think it helps when you kind of like change the kind of the same thing I do with Travis is like with me with heli skiing, not, okay, it's nutrition and people are cheating on their nutrition. Like, how do you have that conversation? Do you like, if you think that conversation is going to destroy the relationship, I don't think you do. Focus on you. If you think there's an opportunity for you to help the person, then yeah, let's try to do this in as tactful a way as we can.
I love it. I love it. I completely agree. And I think that, have you guys read the 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership?
No, but that sounds awesome.
This is a fantastic book, and it has totally changed the way that I think about integrity. So chapter 6 is all on integrity, and I think it applies a lot to this situation, because, I think a lot of us think of integrity as, like you said, doing the right thing, right? But the right thing might be different in each of our minds. And so the way that this book defines integrity, there's 4 different components, but the first part has to do with keeping clear agreements. And so, like you said, Ben, clear is kind. And what are the agreements that you have with this training partner? Like, did you enter into an agreement that says, we're training partners, so we're going to agree to always count our reps, and be honest about our reps and our numbers so that we can help each other be our best? Like, did you ever have that conversation? Is that an agreement? Or do you have some differing opinions about what is appropriate in your training relationship or your friendship? There's also the other component is about taking 100% responsibility. So oftentimes we're focused on, what other people are doing as opposed to, okay, how did I create this situation for myself? So, answering honestly to yourself, okay, how did I create this situation? Well, one, maybe by just allowing it to continue happening without having a conversation. So every time it happens, you're probably feeling extremely frustrated. It's affecting your emotions, your performance. Versus, like you said, Ben, if this is someone that you have a friendship or a close relationship with, can you help to create a different situation by having a conversation with them? Which is another component, which is speaking your truth. So being honest, saying, this is what I'm noticing, coming at it with, especially if it's someone that's a friend, coming at it with giving them the benefit of the doubt, not being accusatory, but being curious, like, hey, I've counted the reps and I feel like, maybe you're not doing all of the reps. I just want to understand why that's happening. Is that true? And why is that happening? And being curious instead of being really accusatory. And you may learn something interesting. I think more than likely, if you come at a conversation like that, good things are going to come out of it for both of you and for the relationship. And then the last part of the integrity definition there is feeling your feelings fully. So probably you are, feeling frustrated every time you see this happening. And so knowing that you've got to like feel that, let it go instead of letting it build and, hopefully not one day erupting into a volcano when you get really mad. But those kind of those four components, thinking about those and knowing that when you are not in alignment, when you are out of integrity in those four areas, that's a huge energy drain. And so being in that environment is draining your energy. It's not necessarily healthy for the other person or for the relationship. And you may have this conversation and it may not go well, right? So you, like you said, Ben, you go into it knowing it may not go well. And then you may decide this isn't a healthy training partnership environment. I'm going to move on. And that's okay too. But I think for someone that, you know, you care about, you have a relationship with, even though it requires some courage and can be a little bit hard, only good things come out of having those hard conversations. It may be very different if it's someone that you notice, you know, in class that you don't really, you know, have much of a relationship with. You may not feel the need to go to that extent, or it may not be appropriate.
Yeah, it strikes me that both of what you guys are saying, you know, I think oftentimes we get stuck in what we can call kind of the messy middle of situations where we don't really want to deal with it, but we also can't really let it go. And so we just sort of sit there and are uncomfortable for just the reason that we're not facing it or we're not doing something about it. And so it strikes me that what both of you guys are saying is like either decide, let it go, focus on you, or go all in and see if you can't actually do something about the situation or about the relationship. The problem here, the challenge here is the lack of decision on which way you're going to go. And the lack of decision is what's actually causing the problem. It's just like standing there hoping that without doing anything myself, this will change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And knowing yourself, like, can you really let go? Because you can fool yourself there too. Like, oh, this doesn't bother me, but really it is. Right. And so a lot of the conversation isn't so much for the other person. It's for you. It's for clearing up that agreement. And I would guess if you have this conversation, no matter which way it goes, you're going to feel lighter and not feel so much stress by the situation anymore.
I love that Julie knew what chapter the integrity chapter was. In chapter
six.
It is
on repeat.
It's like
I listen to it every couple months because it's so good.
What was it? If it's that good, what was it called again?
It's called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. It is one of the best books I've read lately.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you for that. Okay. Thank you for your questions out there. If you want to get a question into the queue, find me on Instagram, PS Cummings. Drop me a DM. We'll get it into our queue. The three of us will be back in just a minute to have a conversation about balance and ambition and maybe even a little bit about work. So stay tuned. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Landkind. Go to landkind.health and get your hands on one of the best productivity boosts I have ever tried. Thoughts on Landkind? Why do we like them so much?
Okay.
And we do.
Yeah. A couple things. First off, Landkind, it's not just a clever name. It's like their sustainable stuff, right? So they give you stuff in a reusable glass jar. So it's not this extra plastic, all the rest. But even let's get to like what the actual thing
yes.
is.
Yes.
So it's a supplement called Seligicide, which comes from the rhodiola plant.
Good job saying that. The first time I said that, I had to say it like four times. Rhodiola. Good job. Keep going.
Okay. Here's what it's like. And as you said, it's like a productivity booster. It was kind of strange for me to experience this for the first time because what I normally go to for that is good old friend caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, caffeine has some negative things with it, from the jitters to the half-life, keeps you up at night. This works very differently. It works on more of a mitochondrial level, literally creating greater access to the energy systems that are already in your body. So if you're trying to focus more, if you're trying to just get more energy for playing with your kids, if you're trying to improve your workouts, here's a cool kind of like usification is I tried it before going to like a social gathering.
Tell me more.
It gives you this level of excited involvement.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it, but like I was more outgoing.
You were the best version of yourself.
At least a better version, which isn't hard for like this.
I love hearing that because my wife will often threaten if we have to go out to see friends like past 7 p.m. She's like, I'm giving you coffee before we go because like
that's the thing. It's like,
yeah,
which is a terrible idea. Like this is my go-to for post noon energy because it doesn't keep you up at night. Yep. It's like if you're trying to reduce caffeine intake, if you need that boost at 3 p.m., this is the go-to.
Yeah, 100%. If you want to see what we are talking about, you can go get yourself 20% off your first order or subscription at landkind.health. Just be sure to use the code excellence at checkout. Again, that's landkind.health. All right, we are back. I've been thinking a lot. Ben, you and I talk about balance a lot, especially as a kind of a balance across the five factors of health, wanting to keep that kind of proverbial frisbee even keeled so that we're not over-indexing towards one thing at the expense of another thing. And one of the Components of balance that I've been thinking a lot about is work balance, and we can call it work-life balance, but whatever the heck you want to call it. But just like the idea of like, where are you pouring your energy into? And Ben, like, I know you're at a place right now, just in this kind of this current context where, and we've talked about it, like you're pouring a lot more into work than maybe you did 2 years ago, right? For various reasons. And we can get into that or not. And so I've been thinking about that a lot. And Julie, I thought this was a great conversation to you because, like, to me from the outside, not really knowing you, like, I imagine you've had to figure out how the heck to balance these things, right? Between becoming a doctor, becoming the CrossFit Games, all the other things. Like, I imagine either accidentally or with a lot of intention, you've had to figure out how to find a sort of balance. And so I've been looking forward to having this conversation with you guys about this. And as is often the case, when I'm thinking about something, I notice other things. And so I just want to kind of couch this in a couple, little bit of context. There's a professor who I really like. His name's Scott Galloway. And he posted something recently. He said, if you want to be economically in the top 10%, much less the top 1%, you should plan on spending 10 to 20 years working and not much else. This is because the trajectory of your career is disproportionately set by your career choices in your 20s. I'm not telling you to work hard all your life. I'm saying your career choices in your 20s are more important than those you'll make later on and will set the trajectory for the rest of your life. And then he finishes up with, I have a lot of balance now in large part because I had almost none in my 20s and 30s. It's been worth it. So choose a career path that has real potential. Okay, so that's one end of this conversation. And then I was listening to an interview with, his name's Kevin Kelly. He's a writer, a futurist. Tim Ferriss calls him possibly the most interesting man in the world. Mm-hmm. And he said the exact opposite. He said, in your 20s, try and spend some time doing something that looks nothing like success. That's kind of crazy, weird, orthogonal, unprofitable, maybe dangerous. That experience, as unsuccessful as it may look then, could become the touchstone for your success later on. So I mostly bring that up just to point at the obvious, which is like, there's lots of ways to think about this idea of balance. And especially as we're younger, I think it's something that I think a lot of younger folks struggle with, quite frankly. They don't know which end of that spectrum to point themselves towards. I'm going to go all in on this thing. Maybe it's the CrossFit Games. Maybe it's a business. Maybe it's something else. Or no, that doesn't make any sense. I want freedom. I want to try things. I want to taste what the world has to offer. And so all that context just kind of in place. I'd love to just your initial thoughts on how do you guys think about balancing the various things across your lives, whether it's work, family, health, hobbies, ambitions, whatever. Like, where do you start? Like, where do you start to come down on how you do that now? And then maybe we can walk backwards to think about how we did that, you know, over the last 10, 15, 20 years, whatever. Julie, I'll let you go first.
Whew, there's a lot to talk about here. This is a great topic. And I think it's interesting that you have that, you know, like you said, you don't really know me, but you have that perception, because I think perception is not always reality. And this has been I can share more about my trajectory and growth. And I think, you know, maybe starting with right now, it's still messy. You know, I think I've had a very similar trajectory to a lot of people, although maybe a bit accelerated, where my, you know, up until 2020, basically, my life was 100% work, and work meant sometimes CrossFit, sometimes school, you know, medicine, but that was almost all of my energy and all of my focus, and the other areas really suffered. And I did not have balance, as much as it looked like, oh, you can balance school and CrossFit, like you're so balanced, but no, it was all work. And so the other areas of my life really suffered. And 2020, like I think it was for a lot of people, was a big gift to me in shaking things up and helping me to reassess sort of how I was living my life and what that balance really looked like, and being honest with myself. I think I was fooling myself a lot, and has shifted. And so, you know, over the last few years, things really swung the other direction because I had a lot of catching up to do. So there was a lot less focus on work and a lot more focus on other areas like relationships, you know, mental, emotional, spiritual health, growth in other areas. And I feel like only now am I kind of starting to swing back where I'm a bit more balanced across the board. But I've always been someone who has been very focused, very good at focusing on one thing, which has served me well in certain areas of life. And so, you know, I felt like, okay, I really want to deep dive on these other areas for a while and I've experienced a lot of growth there. And now for me, my pursuit is, okay, how do I bring all this together and experience more balance day to day?
Do you feel like you know, to Scott Galloway's point, which was like, I have balance now and he's late 50s, mm-hmm. Because I didn't have balance for so long. Do you feel similar in some kind, which is like, I have balance now, but it's because I dedicated so much time to, in your case, kind of like work. Is the balance now a result of the imbalance before? Or do you feel like, thank God I got to this point now because that was unsustainable or unhealthy or whatever else?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a practical sense in that, you know, in terms of having more freedom, working really hard and having some freedom, like, you know, to be able to compete in CrossFit and go to medical school and support myself through that. And then, you know, work as a doctor and to be able to support myself, to have a little bit more flexibility. I think there is a practical aspect to that. I also think that's how we learn. Like, we learn by failing. And so I learned by going way far in the direction of work, experiencing a lot of pain from the other areas of my life that suffered, and then learning and growing through that. And I do think that there is a way, where especially now we're in a world that is different. I think that before, you know, work looked pretty similar for a lot of people. It was like the 9 to 5, you know, you go to work, you come home, you have your family life. Now, especially post-pandemic, things are changing and shifting in so many ways, and people are able to have, you know, side hustles or more flexibility between work and home. And I think that moving forward, we're going to see younger generations have more balance early on, because it's just going to be part of how they grow up. And the world that we live in is going to be a little bit different. So maybe there's a way to accelerate that learning process. For me, that was my, that was my path. I had to go through the pain.
What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I think this is probably the topic we talked about probably the most on here. So I don't think people will be surprised really with my approach to this. If there's the two examples that you gave, the one is like sacrifice early so you can have balance later. And the other is no, go all in on chasing adventure. And then that will lead to success later on. Mm-hmm. If the discussion is balance, those are two opposite ends of a spectrum. Neither are balanced.
Right. They're both imbalances of different kind.
What they're both saying is don't have balance. What they're both saying is go all in now, so that one is saying go all in now so you can have the freedom and the balance later. The other saying take advantage now because later on you'll have the mortgage, the kids, and you'll be entrenched in a career, so you won't have it then. That's just, both of those seem to miss the mark in the way that I view this. And nothing is a right or wrong. They're all just different viewpoints. So to me, that idea of sacrifice now so you can have the freedom later on, well, that's that, like, the working towards some unknown, arbitrary, unguaranteed point in time that says, when I get there, not only will I get there, which no one knows that they will, but that they'll have the other things to fall back on. And they don't take into consideration the fact that maybe you burned your health and now you're sick. Maybe you burned your relationships. You know, you don't get to have those with those things. You don't have the passions that you did otherwise because you were all in. And now you are, I mean, how many people do we know like this, that you become addicted to the grind? You became addicted to it. Mm-hmm. So when you want to step away, and you were quote successful. So you may earn the ability to step away at age 45, but you can't, because your identity and your hormonal cycle is built around this chasing the highs of the stress. Like, I need it and I have to have it. For you to go, nope, now I'm going to kick it and hike the Appalachian Trail, it's not even an option, even if that was the game plan. And it's like, nope, now I'm going to spend all my time with my family, but you don't have the relationship with your family because you spent, you know, 75% of your time in the office or traveling around. So that one doesn't seem to fit it for me. The other one doesn't either, which is like the more hedonistic approach of like, seek pleasure now and then buckle down later. It's just, that's the same thing in a different way. You're never going to have the freedom because you're chasing these, you know, short-term pleasures or these adrenaline highs, whatever they are. To me, it's always been this, can we define success? And success to me is like, I feel like I'm doing it all right now. Like, I'm not sacrificing anything for anything else. And again, this idea of the Frisbee on the pencil, it's okay for it to wobble. And it's always going to wobble. There's no such thing as perfection, as Julie said. But to me, this pursuit and chase of excellence is that there's some level of balance. And it's never going to tip and spill off the side. If we can understand that that's the thing we're chasing, and we have the ability in some way to blur the line between work and play. If, and I'm not saying it has to be perfect. I'm not saying Monday morning needs to feel like, you know, you're playing in the playground as a six-year-old. I'm not saying it's going to feel like your ultimate, pleasure or what you would do if you had ultimate freedom and free time. But this idea, like, I enjoy what I'm doing. If we break up our days into those 3 8-hour chunks, one of them is gone for sleep. One of them is that 8 hours is your work. And I don't think the healthy approach is let's just push that off for 10 years in our 20s. You're not going to have the freedom later on in life because, as I think that first guy you were talking about is like, because I worked really hard, now I have the freedom. I don't believe that any career is going to give you the freedom. To me, it's not career. If you want wealth, you have to, you're never going to be wealthy from your salary. So to me, it doesn't, that matters much, much less as it does in terms of what are you doing with your salary and where are you investing it. You get wealthy from investing, not from your salary. So to me, it's just this understanding of how are we going to create this life for ourselves to the point where if you're told, and Julie's probably has more experience than I do, not personally, but from just career-wise, someone you know is told that, hey, you have 24 months left. Well, do you go like shifting everything? Because if you go and change everything, to me, it's like, well, why are we not doing that right now? I don't believe the idea should be let's sacrifice for later on, but also let's not give up planning completely. Planning is good. We want to be able to plan. Winter is coming. And if you just kind of like spend all summer in the water hole, you're going to die through winter. But it's not like let's never spend any time in the watering hole. Let's cultivate the crops, but also like recognize that we can have some level of enjoyment now. It's not like we're just going to like give it all up. So it still comes to me back to that idea of total balance across all aspects of every role that you play in your life and every aspect that you say is important, whether that's faith, family, health, friends, career, passions, pursuits. I want some level of balance across it so that when you have something that knocks you out of balance a little bit, like I had yesterday at work, I had a little bit more of a stressful day than I normally have. But when I got home, man, like I put the effort into home that when I went home, I had the ability to just like hang out with my 8-year-old daughter for hours. And that felt like, okay, the stress of the day, like, in perspective of the whole thing, not a big deal. Had I not had that because I was sacrificing so much before that, I wouldn't have that safe place to go to because I don't have the balance. And to me, go like, well, I'll have a really good relationship with my daughter in 20 years when I'm, quote, successful and created the freedom to do that. Well, I don't know if we're going to get there. So that's like the way that I continually think about it is, blur the line between work and play to create this balance across all things, knowing that they will be uneven, but I'm not going to go to either end of the spectrum. To me, that's a pretty solid way to chase and pursue this.
Yeah, I love that. I love the Frisbee visual. I think it so much is about the pursuit. I remember this visual from when I went to Tony Robbins' seminar, and he did the visual of a teeter-totter, right? Like if you're on a teeter-totter, the fun of the teeter-totter is going back and forth, right? If you were to be in perfect balance, you would just be sitting there with someone, and that's not very fun. It's like part of the excitement and fun of life is like a little bit, you like push a little bit this way and that way, and then you try to find that happy medium. But like if we all achieved a state of perfect balance and we're just sitting there all the time, like life would probably be not that exciting. So there's something about enjoying the pursuit, like you said, Ben. And then I think the other thing that really resonated with me was just identity, like understanding who you are independent of the things that you do and what, you know, being really sort of secure and content in who that person is, so that when you have things that don't go your way or you aren't quite as balanced, it's not like rocking your whole identity. Because even, I mean, anything can become something that you're chasing, right? Like you could even make having a perfectly balanced life be this thing that you're chasing and you're putting it on this pedestal, like perfection, and then it can become a negative. So there's something about, like we were talking about earlier, just like having this vision for what you want your life to be like, but not being so attached to the outcome, understanding that it may be different. It may turn out differently than you envision. It may turn out even better, but being open to that and just putting the effort in every day to chase that goal, but not being so attached to a certain outcome.
Yeah, I like that a lot. This idea of like, let's let go of perfect. And if it's the Frisbee or the teeter totter, recognizing that it's going to wobble. This is the whole idea. Mm-hmm. It's like, there is no such thing as perfect perfection. And as Tony Robbins says, even if there was, you probably wouldn't want it. But it's, we don't even have to worry about that because it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen no matter how hard you strive for that. And particularly when you get away from the teeter totter model to the more like the Frisbee or the dinner plate thing, because it's, if it was balancing two things, we might be able to actually do that. But no one's life is made up of two conflicting priorities. It's just not. Mm-hmm. It's not like work life, because what's involved in life, it's not a singular thing. It's so many different aspects. So as we, okay, we're going to be spending an extra hour at the office every day. Okay, that's okay, particularly if you've worked hard in the past on building some level of homeostasis. But the idea is an hour extra in the office a day for a period of time. We should allow ourselves that freedom to do that. But what we want to be aware of is that we're not doing the 18 to 20 hours in there and the weekends. And that's the, like, let's go all in, quote, all in. And as CrossFit athletes, you know, it's this weird, I'm trying to get away from words that we've already used before, but it's again, this weird balancing act of, I know that I do need to go all in on this. If I'm going to be, you know, in that middle spot of the podium, you know, Julie got really close, which is amazing. If we're going to try to win this whole thing, it's not about balance. Like if you want to be the best in the world at something, you know, Matt Fraser, Elon Musk, Kobe Bryant, those guys would be the first ones to tell you it's about going all, it's about obsession. You know, it's, you have to be completely obsessed with that. But that goes back to what we need to do first is define success. And if that is your definition of success, then recognize that's where you got to go and you got to sacrifice a whole bunch of stuff along the way. And I've been lucky enough to be around people that are doing that. And it's amazing to see it in firsthand. It's really cool. It's inspiring, sometimes scary, but it's a really interesting thing to be privy to. But what is my definition of success? And if it's going to be something along the lines of, regardless of when that moment comes, the deathbed comes, I'm looking back and going, I'm so glad I spent my time doing that, then the all-in approach might not be that where we want to put all of our eggs. Because you might be left with, well, what about the relationships? Well, what about the health? Well, what about the fill in the blank?
Julie, I'll give you the last word if you've got any.
No, I agree with it all. I think it's really true. It so much comes down to understanding what your vision of success is and what your why is, right? And why are you doing it? And I think this for me is the thing that is most important is what's the underlying reason why, and keep asking yourself that, like, well, why? Keep going deeper and deeper because
I love that.
I find this even in working with patients on their physical health, you know, we can perfect every single area. They're like, well, I want to have perfect nutrition because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do if you're, you know, if you're in the CrossFit world or have certain, you know, workout habits or recovery habits or perfect sleep, perfect metrics on your, you know, Whoop or whatever. And, you know, if that's all coming from a place of fear or a place of not feeling like you're good enough, you know, it ultimately that is still going to, you're never going to be as healthy. That's still going to cause problems later on down the road versus if your intention behind it is like, you know, I'm doing this because I want to be the best I can be. And I really, you know, care about myself. Then things really start to fall into place. I see so many people who have, you know, health metrics that are out of range that are probably more so due to, like, I know you guys talk about all the time, the stress, the cortisol, the trying to be perfect and holding on so much to those outcomes as opposed to the behaviors. And so I think, you know, I just see it all the time in terms of how our physical health also reflects that.
Very cool. Okay. We're going to be back in just a minute for our cool down where we are going to wrap up our most recent 30-day challenge.
This week's episode is brought to you by Timeline Nutrition. Head to timelinenutrition.com/excellence to learn more about their signature product, MitoPure, which is the first product to offer a precise dose of urolithin A to upgrade mitochondrial function, increase cellular energy, and improve muscle strength and endurance. That last bit is important, because there's no way around the fact that if we want to kick ass into our 90s, we need to be strong. Timeline Nutrition has shown over the course of 15 years and 11 human clinical trials that urolithin A can alone significantly increase muscle mass and endurance without any other change in lifestyle. So imagine how potent it would be when paired with your regular and consistent trips to the gym. Timeline Nutrition has three different products: a powder mix that's great in smoothies or juices, a whey protein powder, and soft gels for quick and easy access. And they are offering 10% off your first order of MitoPure. So if you want to learn more about how you can give your cells new life, head to timelinenutrition.com/excellence and use the code excellence when you're ready to purchase. Again, Timeline Nutrition, TimeLine, NutriTion.com/excellence.
Okay, we are back. We've only got a few minutes before we let Julie back into the world of being a doctor. So we're going to wrap this up quick. We are finishing up our most recent 30-day challenge, which is our attempt to cut our social media use by about 50%. I will go first and say that I'm happy to report that I succeeded. I think I went from like 55 minutes down to about 28, I think, over the last 3 to 4 weeks. And so I will not say it was perfect, because what I found myself doing is just doing other things on my phone, which is not fully the purpose of the challenge. But so I give myself like a check mark, but there's still room for improvement, right? There's still, for me, it's still improvement to, just not pick the stupid thing up when I have 2 minutes of silence that I'd rather fill.
I think that's cool, Patrick, that you went to, because that's already a really low number when you compare it to like what the most people are doing. Yeah. But when you kind of pull out that part of your job is social media, you by necessity have to be on there for probably 20 of those minutes a day. So that's like you're doing like 5 minutes of probably the mindless. That's really right. Impressive. That's really cool. Good job, man.
That's awesome.
How about you?
Wow.
Who wants to go first? I'll go. We talked about this a little bit last week, where I did a really good job. I cut it down from about 30 minutes to 15 minutes a day.
Yep.
And then I traveled to Europe and mine went up to 40 minutes a day. For this past week.
Just because you weren't.
You're in hotel room. You're in a hotel room doing nothing, and that's what you end up doing. Travel is a lot of, when you travel without your family, it's lonely. That Instagram thing is a really entertaining companion. I'm curious to see where it goes after this, if it falls back to where it was before, if it falls back somewhere closer to where it was in the middle of this challenge. I think that it was good. I mean, I'm happy and proud with that, you know, under 20 minutes a day. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, cool. Okay, Julie, because we haven't talked about where you started from. Give us the quick context of, like, you know, how bad are you at this to start, and then how did it go?
This is actually really cool. So I joined the challenge a little bit late, so I can't say that I had a specific goal of reducing 50%, but it was a good opportunity for me to take a look. And I would be very curious to compare my screen time to a couple years ago to now, because I don't think I've even really looked to pay attention, but –
Yeah.
That was a big part of my sort of growth when I mentioned in 2020 was really getting away from social media and realizing how it was affecting me. And I think, again, the pendulum is swinging back. I want to be back on it and not be afraid of it like I think I have been. Mm-hmm. But I took a look and I was really quite pleased with myself that my average is really like 10 minutes a day.
Whoa.
And
damn.
Yeah. And my top apps that I use are ones that I'm, you know, very happy with. So it was a cool opportunity for me to look at that. And I think, not to say that I don't go on it mindlessly, I do notice when I'm feeling stressed, when I'm trying to avoid things, that's when I pick it up and I start mindlessly scrolling. But I certainly have kind of broken the addiction that I had. I don't know exact numbers, but a couple of years ago, it was an unhealthy amount that I was on Instagram.
Just as references type thing, the average screen time is, I mean, there's probably all sorts of conflicting reports on this, but it looks, it ranges somewhere between 3 and 7 hours a day.
Wow. Yeah. Just total screen time.
Total screen time. And then for Instagram, I will say I have done this with my athletes because it's like everyone knows, well, like comparison is the thief of all joy and Instagram is just that comparison game. If we're trying to lower stress and increase recovery, this is a really low hanging fruit for our athletes to kind of get off of this. And it's really eye opening to see how much time. Now, again, a lot of them are building their brand and they're using it too. So some of it's necessitated through, but I don't believe that they're spending, most of them were somewhere around that 3 to 4 hours a day on social media. Mm-hmm. And these are athletes that are training 8 hours a day. So,
yeah. I was in that. I wouldn't say 3 to 4 hours, but I know I'd have to, I wish I had written down what my numbers were, but it was hours. Yeah. It was not minutes, before. And it's, you know, breaking that for a little while. I mean, there's nothing better than doing just a social media holiday to break, just like you do maybe a sugar holiday, yeah. Just to understand how it's impacting you psychologically. You know, but I think also just being mindful of what you're following there. Like I'm very intentional now about the accounts I follow and looking at things that are more uplifting and inspirational instead of, you know, comparison.
That's one of the things that I've been really, is like the less you follow, the more, the easier it is to get off of it. Because you kind of want to scroll until you're like, you've been, you know, you're up to date or whatever they say.
You've read the internet.
You're done. Like, I don't even know how they, so I'm following 31 things right now. And that's down from,
awesome.
That's down from 70 at one point.
Yeah.
But maybe that was a great challenge. That was one of the things that's what I had my athletes do is right away. I was like, okay, how long are you on there? How many are you following? And they'd be like, I'm following 655. I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. We're going to do an audit, go through and delete 200. Let's get that number down below 450. And just by that nature of doing that, you know, they spend less time.
Very cool. Okay, Julie, we got to let you go. Is there anything, anywhere, maybe not social media, that you'd like to point people's attention towards? Maybe Wild Health or something else?
Sure. I mean, I still am on social media. It is in my horizon to be more active and sharing more on there again in the future. But I'm at Julie Fouché on Instagram if you want me to look at your posts for 10 minutes a day. but my podcast is Pursuing Health. And then you can learn about Wild Health at wildhealth.com. They have a podcast as well. And then for anyone who's interested in becoming a patient, we have a discount code CFWILD, which will give you a discount on becoming a patient.
Yeah, I will say that it'd be weird of me not to say this, but I am a patient of Wild Health and I've had a terrific experience with it.
Awesome.
Very cool. Julie, thank you so much for taking some time answering our questions. If folks out there want to get a question in the queue for a future episode, find me on Instagram, but only for 2 seconds a day. Just long enough to send me a question. P.S. Cummings, drop me a DM. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. Thank you for sharing the show with your friends. Ben and I will be back next week for another episode of Chasing Excellence.